Welcome to Real Talk JavaScript, the weekly talk show that brings you stories of real-world development from industry experts and developers like you and me. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallin, Craig Shoemaker, and John Papa find out what it takes to write, deploy, and maintain apps that stand up to the demands of the real world. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to Real Talk JavaScript. This is episode 89, and it's all about Electron today. Ward, have you ever used Electron?
Well, you know, in this time of being locked away, I've been spending an incredible amount of time learning about electrons and their kindred muons and taus and all of these elementary particle physics.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And quarks, top, bottom, charm, all that stuff. That's what we're talking about, right?
You know, quark is one of my favorite scientific words. I just love the word.
Yeah. I'm good. I believe that comes actually originally from James Joyce, but now we're really going down the obscurity tunnel.
We are. This is Real Talk Physics, episode 89. And, you know, this week we've got a great guest on from a country that we both love.
Yes, indeed.
The country of Greece. And I miss being at Greece. I love being there. And Aristides Bampakos, welcome to the show.
Hello, all. Thanks very much for having me in the show. I'm very grateful for having me here, and I hope you enjoy my talk.
I think it's going to be great talking about this. We haven't talked yet about Electron, but first, let's let our listeners learn a little bit about you. So Aristides started as a .NET developer, but in the last 8 years, he's been focused on web development using Angular and AngularJS. He currently works as a front-end web developer at Plexscape, and he co-organizes Angular Athens Meetup and teaches web development at Social Hackers Academy and CodeHub. He loves writing, so he maintains his blog at Medium and currently is preparing his first book about Angular. And he enjoys watching movies with superheroes, and I'm curious about mapping technologies with JavaScript. So today we're going to talk about Electron, and you've had a lot of experience with it?
Yes, in the company that I work for at Plexscape, we have our main product is called PlexEarth, and it is built with Microsoft technologies. It is a desktop application, but internally it has a tool integrated, which we have created. We have built with Electron.js and Angular.
Wow! Can you set this up for me a little bit? It's a Microsoft desktop app with Electron inside of it.
Yes.
So that seems really unusual to. In other words, most of the time I think of downloading an Electron app and then running it straight out. I don't think of hosting it inside of a desktop app. Why did that make sense?
Right. As I have already said, it's a desktop application. So we decided to convert it to a web application so that we can enable collaboration between different users. For example, imagine that you are a civil engineer that is sitting in front of his desk in the office and using the desktop application, PlexEarth. And we have another version of the application in the web, which is a web application, and they collaborate with each other.
Ah, so it's kind of an integration between a desktop app and an Electron app. Fascinating. And you know what? That actually makes sense. So the desktop app was originally a kind of a legacy application?
Okay, let me make it clear for you. PlexEarth is the main product, okay? The main product has another desktop application integrated into it, which is called Map Explorer. This application was built with Microsoft technologies. So we decided to rewrite it from scratch as a web application to enable this type of collaboration that I have just told you. So we decided to write it in Electron.js.
Wow. And is this already shipping? You've got it going in Electron?
Yes. The Electron application is shipped together with the main product, PlexEarth, and it is also updating together. I mean, we don't ship it as a separate application. It's bundled in the main product.
Terrific. What did Electron give you that made this, as opposed to just bringing it up in a, some kind of a browser? What capabilities did Electron give you that you couldn't get another way?
Right. Electron is a cross-platform JavaScript framework that you can use it to build desktop applications. Okay, it is built on top of Chromium, Node.js, and V8 engine. So our team consists of web developers. So we decided that it would be beneficial for us to leverage existing web skills and learning a new language such as C# or C++. So that's why we ported to Electron.
Why Electron instead of a full desktop platform though? Like, I get what Electron does and you can write in those languages, but was there something that Electron let you do that you couldn't do in a full platform? Because you could write, like you said, in C# and do something like that. Is it just because of the JavaScript experience that you had, or?
Yes, absolutely. This was the reason. Electron has some limitations, okay? For example, our Map Explorer, which is the Electron part, must communicate with the main application, the desktop one. So this is very complicated to do this. But we decided to go with Electron only because of the web, only because of our development skills, because we are all Angular developers and we don't have any knowledge of C# or another language.
That is so cool. I have to tell you, John, because I'm so used to hearing on the other side of the story where somebody only has C# skills and they're terrified of going to have to deal with JavaScript.
You know what? I think we've hit an inflection point in the web world, you know, where for years, we've had people who've got 20 or 30 years of C# or Java or other kinds of desktop, great skills to have, and then they move to the web. This feels like we're at this point now where we've had really solid web JavaScript frameworks for a decade or more, and people are starting to, that's a huge skill, and then people are starting to take that and move it into other platforms. I'm excited about this, actually.
Yeah, I think it's great.
So tell me this, with Electron, I have not written an Electron app in a while, but with Electron, I know there are some limitations, but there's also some great features. Like in a normal web app, you can't access certain things like the file system and whatnot without jumping through hoops because of the browsers and a sandbox. But with Electron, you can do some of those things. So can you talk about what some of the benefits of Electron that helped you? Let's take a quick break from a word from our sponsors.
Protects your apps from reverse engineering and tampering with Preemptive, makers of JS Defender. Now, what's great about JS Defender is that it offers a solution for protecting your JavaScript apps using different types of obfuscation transforms and runtime checks. Whether you're protecting a mature app that's facing new risks or a new app that hasn't been released yet, JS Defender has you covered. So try it out for yourself. Visit preemptive.com/realtime for a free real-time demo of JS Defender.
And we're back. So Aris, I was just asking about the benefits of Electron. Could you tell us some of those?
Electron applications consist mainly of two processes. We have the main process that is used for heavy tasks and calculations like interacting with the file system, and the renderer process that we used to manage the user interface only. So there are two separate processes that communicate each other using asynchronous communication messages. The actual benefit of an Electron app is that when it loads up, it is an executable, okay, obviously. But when it loads up, it loads a main index.html file, actually, that contains all our application assets, such as CSS files, JavaScript files. So it is like rendering a web application inside the desktop window. Many, many applications that you can find in the website also, such as Visual Studio Code or Slack, which have been
built. Visual Studio Code!
Yeah.
That's my favorite tool.
I love it.
But you know, it's kind of like server-side rendering on the client, because all the assets are there. There's no transfer time or anything like that. It just, boom, it's up and running.
Yes, correctly. our we have taken the step further, and all the applications that I referred, they are just rendering a web application inside an Electro window, okay, inside the desktop window, if you want. Our application doesn't do just rendering. It is a whole back. It is also a backend API, because all the data are in the file system. So it's not an ordinary web application that you can take it and package it like an Electron application, if you know what I mean.
Really, the data are sitting on the client machine, in the client's file system.
That's right. We have done this approach because the data are of customers, are customers' data. So we don't want to interfere. We don't want to set up a server. There are issues, you know, GDPR issues, stuff like that. And because...
So due to GDPR and privacy issues, you store everything on the client's machine, or is there anything you send back to the
server? Nothing. We don't have any server at all. Everything is client-side. So the customer can take his data and go to another computer and load the application, and he will have it available.
Well, I was going to say
you
stumped that is
Ward.
So,
I don't hear Ward say that a lot.
Well, you know, I mean, I haven't. That is such a mind bender there, because the trend for so long has been to make sure that nothing stays on. No data stays on the client, and it's all supposed to be in the cloud somewhere, and you've completely flipped that upside down, and why not? But also, there's nothing, you know, if somebody had it where they really wanted the data in the cloud, they could still have the architecture you're describing. They would just have to add the extra piece to bring the data down, right?
That's right. The real
This is not a technical limitation. It's right. A choice that you made.
Exactly.
Actually, we follow this approach because Map Explorer is a tool of the main product. I mean, our customers use the main product. I haven't told you that our main product is a AutoCAD plugin. It runs inside AutoCAd.
And that's the PlexEarth.com. Is that the website?
That's
that?
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, it looks very cool. It says connect AutoCAD with Google Earth, and the main video is making me nauseous because it looks like I'm falling to the earth. But that's really cool.
Yeah, it is. I come from a programming environment with CRM, CRPs, and warehouse management systems. And when I started learning about mapping, it was very, very exciting. It was a whole new world for me. Our product, which is PlexEarth, as you said, allows civil engineers to import map images into their AutoCAD projects. And we use many sources to grab those images. We can get them directly from satellite image providers like Airbus. We can get it indirectly from providers such as Google Earth, Google Maps, Bing Maps, or OpenStreetMaps. And the third option is the Map Explorer that I am talking about, which in Map Explorer, you can create your custom map and import it into the AutoCAD project. Because I would like to get into more detail about how a map is composed. You see, a map is not just a flat image. Suppose that you want to create a map that it has Bing Maps on the bottom. It shows the borders of the United States, of each state, and it shows a background color for each state. Now, how would you do such a map? You would create it from separate layers. For example, you would put a layer on the bottom, which is your base layer. For example, Bing Maps. On top of that, you would put a layer from another provider that gives you the border of the states. And on top of that layer, you would put another provider that would give you the background colors of each state. So you can understand that a map is not just a single image. It is composed of many layers. And Map Explorer, which is built with Electron.js, has given us this opportunity to create these custom maps. And you can import it, and you can import them finally in your AutoCAD project.
You know, you're making me think about, I do some drawing on the side of with Procreate on my iPad. And it's making me relate this to the layers that I use when I'm doing drawings. Or even just in PowerPoint or any other tools where you're creating images and you're putting layers on top of layers to kind of create what you want the end effect to be. Is that kind of how this is working? I'm imagining like the map layer in the bottom is just the map with no borders, no cities, no colors. Then you start layering on top of it everything that you want to see, your buildings, your borders, colors, population densities, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It is just as you described.
And can I assume that there's some kind of a program layer so that I can use data, you know, like where are the grocery stores I'm interested in or something like that, to put little pins and stuff. So that would be another layer that I could create dynamically and layer that on top of the other layers. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. There are many, many providers that you wouldn't think there are so many. You can think that each layer is an endpoint, a restful, not restful. It's an endpoint. It's an HTTP. You make an HTTP request and get some data back. So each layer has its own endpoint. A map provider, for example, do you know ArcGIS? ArcGIS is a very well-known map provider. So what do they do? They provide endpoints either in their proprietary formats or in some standard format. So in Map Explorer, you select what type of provider you would like to use. For example, there is Google Maps, which is a proprietary format. There is Bing Maps, but there is also WMS. WMS is its protocol. It stands for Web Map Service, and it can be implemented by many providers. So each provider has its own endpoint that you can call with HTTP and get images.
So let's pull this back to Electron and how this works. Because I find, you know, like the app is cool. I'm trying to think about if I've got an Electron app running all this information. There's things that we need to figure out as developers, such as how do I make these HTTP calls to these providers from Electron? Because now my Electron app is a client, which is going to go off to some API to make a request. And I've got to make sure I've got the proper protocols or headers and things like that in there. How do I do authentication? Like if some of these APIs are tied down, how do we do that? Can you talk a little about the interface between if I'm a developer and I have an Electron app, and I want to make HTTP requests, what do I need to know?
You just need to, you have two choices. Either you make the HTTP request through the Electron interface. Electron is Node.js, okay? So you use a library. You can use a Node.js library to make HTTP requests, like Axios. Or you can use client-side HTTP libraries, such as the Angular built-in HTTP client. In our case, we use the second one because our Map Explorer is written in Electron.js and Angular.
So you used modern Angular version 8 or 9 or something like that to develop this in Electron?
Yes, that's right. We try to be as more updated as we can. Every time a new version of Plex Earth is shipped, we ship a version of Map Explorer. It is not obligatory that we don't ship Map Explorer as its own application. So we update it only when the main product is updated.
Curiously, what's the cadence? How often do you guys release a new version?
Absolutely not so early, not 2 weeks. I think it's 2 months.
Oh, that's pretty fast.
But a major version takes many, many time to release it.
Of course.
I mean, for example, to go from 3 to 4, we took 2 years, I think. In the meantime, we release these builds that we can send to a client that has some problem. But official releases that we upload to our website, we release very rare.
So returning to John's question, so you can just use any HTTP client that you want. You guys have, because you're in Angular, you happen to use Angular's HTTP. But there's nothing special about it. I mean, you just have to set up cores and authentication and all that, right? Just like you would for any web app?
Yes. Everything that is valid for a web app, it is for Electron. But we don't make these HTTP requests by our own. I mean, the endpoints that we use for getting imagery, when I say imagery, I mean map images. We use some libraries to do this. We don't make raw HTTP requests. For example, there is a library that is called OpenLayers, a very popular JavaScript library for map visualizations and handling that we use, and it is responsible for getting image data into our application. We don't do raw HTTP requests for image data. We use HTTP client only for if we want to fetch, for example, some specific data, such as the regions of a country, for example. If we want to have a list of the United States, we will make an HTTP request using Angular library. But for map-specific data, we use OpenLayers.
Are there any special considerations for security or authentication or something?
Who needs security? Come on.
I don't. I consider it useless, but some people still think.
That's a great question.
Yes. For security, we have two aspects of security and authentication in our application. There is the security concerns that Electron has, which are many, because maybe it is with desktop applications, but it is also a web application. And it has all the bad things that all web applications have about security. And we have security and authentication also with the map providers, because we have providers that you need to authenticate with them before you can get image data. Or there are some providers like Bing Maps or Google Maps that require an API key to use their service. So what we do for the first part in the Electron.js, we try to use all best practices that Electron.js suggests for security. There is a how-to in the website that someone can follow. There are some switches that you can enable so that your application runs secure. There is a switch that you can enable and run your application in a sandbox mode where it can do many things. For example, it provides you from executing JavaScript in the client and stuff like that.
Ward, I'd like to just kind of jump in for a sec. I'm curious. You work with a lot of enterprise customers in your role at your company at IdeaBlade. And I've worked with some with Disney and some other companies I've worked with in the past. And Electron occasionally comes up. It doesn't always come up, but I've seen it come up two or three specific times in my career. I'm curious, have you seen this kind of an idea, a need for a web-based product on the desktop?
You know, John, I bump up against it almost. It's one of those things like where somebody says, I really think this would be a good idea, and then it passes me by. So I don't have this experience. This is all territory that I would like to know about. But my customers have not asked me to do it. Are you in the same position?
You know, it happens to me, so not in my current role in developer relations, because I don't focus on that as much, but when I was working in enterprise, occasionally we'd see a need from the business where they want to run a desktop app. Like, they just don't have any appetite for a web app. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Sometimes it's just, you know, they don't like the browser. Sometimes there's more of a business reason for it, where they're used to using a desktop app. That's what their employees or customers are used to. They want to do more. They want to do things that the desktop can do well, like interacting with the file system, for example. That came up a lot.
Right. Yeah, that's usually a reason. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, doing that through the browser is just, you know, it's not fun. And and you can't even do it directly, but I mean, there's ways to get around it with, you know, make the user choose what files to interact with and yada, yada. But that's usually where it's come up. So I've only actually worked with a couple of Electron apps personally, other than like the main ones like VS Code and, you know, and Slack and Teams. So I'm just kind of curious, you know, in the enterprise world, what kind of applications can benefit from this, beyond the ones that I've seen, which are mostly ones that need to emulate a desktop experience. Aris, do you have any examples of other apps that you've worked with Electron?
Except the Visual Studio Code, this in the Slack, no. I think that Skype is also Electron, but I'm not very sure. Except for of them, I haven't used any other Electron apps. You know, there is a very great concern when you're working with the Electron application.
Concerns. Yeah, you mentioned a security concern earlier. I want to come back to that too.
Yeah. The real security concern is when you want to communicate between the main and the renderer process. Older versions of Electron had an object, a JavaScript object, which is called remote, and it was very harmful. It was considered very harmful because it allowed you to execute JavaScript without any security concerns at all, without any security boundaries. I mean, you can execute whatever you want in JavaScript. It was very dangerous. So in the latest versions of Electron.js, they introduced IPC, the way of communicate asynchronously between these two processes, which proved to be much safer than using the remote object. You can think of the remote object as exposing a JavaScript, as exposing an interface of Node.js into the client right ahead without any caution.
Kind of like eval, you know? Eval is evil? That's right.
Like eval. For example, you could make calls to Electron APIs from the client. Just so simple. But it is very dangerous. So they introduced IPC. IPC is a mechanism that you can communicate using callbacks. And they recently have upgraded to promises, to promise-based. So,
and can I prevent, can I do something in my code to prevent somebody from using the evil remote? Do I just have to, as a coding standard, stop it?
Yes. An Electron.js is, when Electron.js boots up, it creates a browser window. The object is called browser window. And you can pass in some properties. One of such properties is called node integration, I think. It's inside web preferences. So you have browser window, and a constructor. The constructor takes some parameters like the width, the height of the window. And there is also another object inside, which is called web preferences. It refers to the client, and it has a switch, a flag, called node integration. If you set it to false, then you are open for security problems. If you set it to true, it is open for anyone to do what they want. But if you set it to false, you're okay.
So I'm looking at the documentation for how to disable the remote, and this is on the Electron site in a tutorial. And it's talking about why remote is bad. And I'm reading this for the first time, to be very honest. It's talking about the IPC channel and what you're getting into. But it says here to disable it, one way to do that is when you create a new browser window, you pass a web preference of enable remote module set to false. Is that the same kind of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, there is more than one property. I don't remember the combination. In our applications, we haven't disabled that because we are sure that the code that runs inside our application will not access any an external resource, and we're not open.
Yeah, there's a whole web page I put up here. I'm really glad Electron's done this. There's a whole web page on security and native capabilities and what your responsibility is. And this is from their wording on their site. And I put the link up there. It's really good read. I've been scanning it as you've been talking. I think more apps should do this, more platforms, because to be honest, a lot of security stuff, people blame the technology, but every technology has security gaps. It's what do you do to protect yourself? How do you protect yourself when you're developing any app? And I like that Electron has laid this out there so you can know what are your risk areas and then how do you stop those?
Well, it's like working in a kitchen. You know, you're going to have sharp knives, right? And
get rid of the sharp knives, Ward. That's
it. Yeah. And you could cut yourself. But if you didn't have sharp knives, you wouldn't be making dinner. So you have a responsibility. You have to have them, but you have a responsibility to use them wisely.
Speaking of responsibility, let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. Hey, Ward, you know, I was building an application the other day and I pulled in this really cool UI component, but it brought along a lot of dependencies with it. How do you deal with that?
I don't like that, John. It reminds me that the AG Grid, which is an advanced editable data table that we use in a lot of our enterprise apps because it addresses the complex scenarios we encounter. AG Grid doesn't have any dependencies at all.
Zero dependencies. Well, tell me, why is that good? Like, what is the value of having zero dependencies?
Well, it's wonderful not having to wonder if while I'm pulling that in, I'm also pulling jQuery in or Lodash or who knows what, in part because that's extra stuff coming over the wire. It's extra files that I don't know what they're all about. It means when my client's security team has to evaluate this, they're evaluating AG Grid and not everything else that might be slipping in under the covers or is something that we have to worry about there.
You know, it's great to see this day and age, you can have a zero dependency library that does something like complex data grid functionality. So all of you out there, do check out AG Grid at their website at ag-grid.com. And we're back.
So, Aristides, are there other security concerns that we should know about when using Electron?
Yes, we have faced some problems with security in specific operating systems. I mention two of them. The first one is one of our customers faced a problem when tried to execute our Electron application about group policy. Apparently, the group policy of their domain, of their network domain, did not allow execution of this type of application. So we consulted him to check it with his network administrator to solve that. And they loosened the group policy so the application could install correctly. And another one problem was with code signing. When you try to install an Electron application, you will get an error message, much like a warning from Windows 10, especially, about code signing. You can skip this step and continue with the installation, but Windows 10 tells you that this application must be code signed in order to be trusted.
Wow, what do you do about that?
Nothing.
And that's the end of our show.
Apparently, we have to do something. So,
so what did you do?
We haven't done it yet. We just skipped the step.
Awesome!
It's obviously a little frightening, and you have to explain it to your client and just say, "I know it's going to ask you this, and you just have to bypass it and run it."
The problem is that Electron.js does not have a building mechanism for code signing. So you need to either to use an external tool or a library to code sign it, which is, we have research for that, and it is very complicated at this point.
Now that makes sense. I mean, every app you install, there's always some things like this that you have to be careful of. I mean, even when I install apps on my Mac, I always get those, Docker wants to install locally on your machine.
But at least you can say, yes, I know what I'm doing.
If I don't know what I'm doing?
Well, then you do what everybody does and you say yes, just like you accept all of those terms and conditions, even though you have no idea what you...
Wait, was I supposed to read those terms and conditions?
Absolutely, John. But this leads us directly to my final question for you, Aristides, which is, All right. What else? What are the alternatives to Electron that get you anywhere close to what you need?
There are some alternatives, not so great solutions, though. I will mention some of them. The first one is the Ionic framework, which offers a solution where you can build your application in three different environments, either mobile, web app, or a desktop app, which apparently it's Electron. There is also Node GUI, which has a great performance, and it's very efficient from a memory management perspective. But they force you to use their own custom user interface components. There is also NW.js, which is the former Node WebKit. It has a very nice feature with source code protection out of the box. So it's like it allows you to magnify and minify your code, obfuscate your code, so that it cannot be readable. And I finally, the past 6 months, I found a project from Google Experiment Labs called Carlo. The interesting thing about this project is that it does not embed Chromium inside the executable, as Electron does, but it uses the Chromium of your system, of your computer. So the resulting executable is much smaller, because an executable in Electron, in our case, for example, is about 80 to 100 megabytes. But unfortunately, I learned that this Carlo project was abandoned. I learned it the previous week.
So that's the scary thing. You know, Electron is the big dog, as we say here. It's got the lion's share of the attention, and we know it works for VS Code. And did we say that it also works for Slack? Is under Slack? Is that how Slack?
Yeah, and I also put a link into the show notes of Electron's got a page showing all the main apps that are using it, which is kind of cool.
So you know, if you're looking out there, I mean, I understand that you're investigating these alternatives, but none of these other alternatives have I even heard of, whereas I've always heard about Electron. So I get the feeling that I'm taking a risk by trying one of these others. Do you get that feeling too, Aras?
Yes. Even if I have met a solution lately that uses a standard input, standard output that I didn't mention because it's very early. I mean, this library is at an infancy for the time being. There isn't any serious alternatives that you can base your product on it. I mean, it's Electron, okay? It's a big dog, as you have said, and there is not many that you can do about it. If you want a desktop application, you should go with Electron.
One of the things I just looked up here is looking at the apps that use Electron, and two others we didn't mention are Twitch and WhatsApp. So I was looking around, and the first article I found on WhatsApp using Electron, the title of it is "Flaws in WhatsApp's Desktop App Allowed Remote Access to Files, Yet Another Electron Implementation of a Secure App Turns Out Not to Be." And this is from February. So I think this is the kind of thing that sometimes happens with Electron apps is, I haven't read this article through yet, but I'm imagining they did something that wasn't following the security practices.
But you're really in a tough spot, right? I mean, you went to Electron because it had access to your file system. So now you're complaining because it has access to your file system.
Yeah, it seems like an interesting problem. I mean, but again, look at the larger picture. WhatsApp, Twitch, Microsoft, Slack. These are big companies betting on Electron too.
So ours... who owns Electron? What's its roadmap? And you know, what makes it a good horse for you to continue to ride in the future?
Electron is an open source project, so it is run by the Electron team. We have based one of our main tools on this technology. In the future, we would like to give it to our customers as an alternative, because we started to create it to create our product as a desktop application, but our target is to have it in more than one environment, to have also a web application. And I think the tools that it gives you can help you achieve many, many great features, because the community also that supports Electron.js is very large. There are many projects, many open source projects that you can use when building an Electron application. For example, you can use a library for JSON storage. You can use another open source library for packaging your app. I mean, this Electron thing is backed by the open source community. So as we go further, as days pass and years, it will become better and better. And some of the security issues, I think that they will be solved. But there will be always security issues, as there are in the web applications. So we must not forget that Electron.js is not a desktop application. It's a web application disguised as a desktop one.
You know, it's a good point. And as you were talking, I put in a note in the show notes about Electron's governance and what they do. And it seems they have different committees for security, safety, APIs, ecosystem releases, and a couple others. There's a lot of folks, some of them I'm familiar with, from some pretty large companies who contribute there. But something I think we completely glossed over, we have barely talked about it, is really good to end on. And that's Electron apps, like a web app, same thing you just said, Aris, is that you need to update these. Just like with a web app, when there are security issues in any software, like we get Chrome updates with either new features or security patches. A lot of products do this. Electron is no different. So you need to update Electron and you need to update your own software. And there's a mechanism in Electron to do this too, which you can find in the show notes. So Aris, thank you so much for coming on to the show today. We really appreciate you talking to Electron, and thank you for sharing this app too. Folks out there, you can find the app that he's talking about if you go to a couple of the websites in the show links. The one is Plex Earth for the company Plexscape. So give it a shot, take a look, so you can actually see what they've kind of built and how this all works. We like to end our show with final thoughts for our listeners. Ward Bell, I almost hate to ask today, what is your final thought? I feel like there's something coming.
I opened, with a misdirection about electron particle physics. And I'm going to end with that same misdirection with one of my favorite YouTube channels from Fermi Labs in Chicago, where they are talking about these kinds of particle physics in a way that I can, I have this, you ever get that feeling like you almost understand something? I get that when somebody speaks Italian to me and I feel like I'm just like moments away from understanding what they're saying. Well, that's what it's like watching these YouTube things. I feel like I almost understand what particle physics is about. Anyway, it's good fun as long as you're cooped up.
My final thought for today is I've been upgrading my networking in my house. I ran into some issues where I was getting not great coverage. It was good, but not great. And I had, I upgraded to fiber. It finally came to my neighborhood. So yay. And now that like my entire family's home, we're all working hard and everybody is streaming Zoom and YouTube and Netflix and Disney Plus. So I decided to get a device that has better coverage and can handle the higher throughput of fiber. And I looked around quite a bit. And the one I landed on is from a company called Ubiquiti. And they make a product called Unified Dream Machine. And to be very clear, I get nothing for if you look at this or not. So I'm just telling you my opinion so far is that this Unified Dream Machine is amazing. It is the best Wi-Fi device I've ever had in my house. And it was so easy to set up. It literally does so much. I'll let you look into it on your own. But if the price looks like $299 on their website, I'll put a link in the show notes. But check it out. It may not be what you need, but if you're like me and you've had issues with Wi-Fi, give this thing a try.
You have to have fiber, right? You have to have fiber coming in?
You don't have to have fiber. You can work with it with anything. It just plugs in like any Wi-Fi device you've got. And it just works. I mean, I literally, my upstairs, where I've got all my kids' bedrooms, I have just that device, and it's covering every bit of the upstairs with its signal. And that's that's the first time ever in my life I've had a Wi-Fi device do that. And I'm getting really fast Wi-Fi download speeds. So not even to mention all the cool stuff you can do by like tweaking firewall settings and like looking at what's using your network and setting up different networks for your home. So if you're into that, you can do it too. But if you just want to plug it in and be done, this is also a great device. Aristides, what is your final thought for our listeners?
Yeah, I have two final thoughts. The first one is that we may be safe sometime in the future from coronavirus, but from web security flaws, we will never be safe, and especially with Electron applications. And the second one is that I have recently found the blog of one of my colleagues, Fanis Prodromou, where we're doing a channel in YouTube together, and we are talking about Angular-related stuff. And he recently uploaded his personal blog, so I would like to share that with you. It has very nice content, and I think it is worth for someone, for a web developer to start reading it. I put the link on the show.
Well, that's great. We'll put that in the show notes. And Aristides, you also write a lot on Medium and things like that. Do you have a link that we can put in the show notes for people to learn more from you?
Sure. I have a Medium blog that I usually write about Angular. Actually, only for Angular. And I would like also to say that the reason that I started my blog, because I'm not the type of guy that that likes to write blogs. The reason was that it was an issue in the AngularJS style guide of John. This was the reason that I started blogging. Because someone asked something, and I helped him because I like to help people. I like open source, so I helped him. And many people get into the issue, and they were saying thanks. They just show their gratitude. And someone of them told, why don't you write it down? And so I started blogging. And I like to write so much, especially for Angular, that from the end of the year, I have started my own book about Angular framework that is going to be published by Pact Publications on September.
Congratulations.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks very much. Thanks.
Writing a book is quite the investment in time. And thank you so much for sharing that with us. And I really, the great takeaway, because I think that's great advice you just lent to everybody. Something that you've done where you solved a problem out there, folks, if you've solved a problem, write it down, put it in a blog. If you don't have a blog, go to Medium or go to dev.to. These are great aggregator places where you can just write an article and they host it for you. But it's great. And I think you're right. There's a rewarding feeling about when you share information on the web and people benefit from that. Generally, that feels really good inside.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a person that wants to help, because I'm also active in the volunteering section. I was a teacher about 2 years ago in an organization called Social Hackers Academy here in Athens, that we helped refugees and vulnerable people to learn web development using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. So if you want to help, that is awesome. I mean, you will sometime get the feeling of the reward that you said, and it is a very nice feeling.
That's great. That's really a great thing to do. We should talk about that more on our show, Joe. That's great.
And I would like also to say that we owe very much to some other people like you, Ward, or John, that paved the way for us to do the same and help the other people. So it is a payback, you know, a give back.
Well, thank you for saying that. I think it's nice that we have such a good community out there in the JavaScript and web world. And with that, folks, I want to say thank you to our guest and to Ward. Thanks, both of you, for coming on today. It was a great discussion. And that I hope that everybody out there, that you learned quite a bit about Electron. Definitely dive into the show notes. We have a very deep set of links in the show notes today, probably a good 25 links in there, stuff we talked about. We appreciate you listening to Real Talk JavaScript. This has been the 89th episode that Ward and I have put through here with our other co-hosts, Dan Wallin and Craig Shoemaker, and we really appreciate you listening to us. You'll hear from us every Tuesday morning. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk JavaScript. This show and all of our shows are available at www.realtalkjs.com with links and notes. John and Ward would love to hear what you think, especially about potential guests and topics for future shows. Follow and send them a message on Twitter at realtalkjs.